التواريخ التي تطلق من
We followed closely the missiles Iran launched at Israel to defend itself, which is a legitimate threat. Israel is supported by countries like the US and European countries.
يعني متابعين الأحداث بتاعت
We followed the Israeli attacks on Iran, a sovereign and respected country. This aggressive regime has oppressed the Islamic nation and the Palestinian people. I pray that Allah grants victory to both Iran and the Islamic nations.
Even in a city scarred by war, the echoes of international struggle still reach deeply. Iran's actions remind many Sudanese that silence isn't the only option. Dignity, even under siege, can still speak and be heard.
Here in Khartoum, the war is local, but the struggle feels global. As Iran stands its ground and asserts its influence, many Sudanese see a mirror of their own fight, a people refusing to accept silence or submission. Abdullah Hussein, Khartoum.
Foreign journalists walking through the ruins of residential neighborhoods, witnessing the human cost of war firsthand. Each destroyed home telling a story. Personal belongings buried beneath the rubble, lives forever changed, and families left shattered in the wake of Israeli missile strikes. One of the hardest hit areas on June 15th was Tehran's Tajrish Square, normally a busy shopping hub.
The innocent blood that was shed will never be forgotten. We will never forgive or forget these atrocities.
Traffic CCTV footage released a week later captured two powerful explosions. The first struck the upper floors of a building. The second hit the street, rupturing a main water pipeline and sending debris flying across the square. Vehicles hurled into the air. The blast left behind scenes of chaos. At least 12 civilians killed and more than 50 injured. Amid the devastation, residents rushed to help one another, pulling the wounded to safety from the flooded, debris-strewn streets.
We had to act quickly to minimize the damage. After the explosions, the street was left with a massive crater and severe flooding.
Local residents and shopkeepers recounting the harrowing moments, the deafening sound of the blast, the frantic rush to find shelter, and the heartbreak of returning to shattered homes, destroyed storefronts, and neighbors who never made it back.
We invited you here to witness the scale of destruction caused by the Israeli regime, so you can be a voice for the war crimes committed against the Iranian people. No awakened soul or conscience can accept this level of disregard for human rights.
The tour then moves to Tehran's Narmak neighborhood, where a university professor, labeled by the enemy as a nuclear scientist, was targeted in his own home. The attack claimed the lives of the professor's entire family and several neighbors. Now the residence lies in ruins, reduced to rubble. And what remains is a sobering scene, a stark reminder of the human cost behind what Israel describes as targeted assassinations.
It's very disturbing to see all these belongings to the children, like the school books, the place they have, and to see like they are completely innocent and why they got killed. I mean, even the scientist also, he was not working on any atomic bomb. He was working on civilian nuclear facilities. So this is against the Convention of Geneva to attack civilians.
Through every stop, foreign journalists hear firsthand the voices of survivors. And they view evidence that directly contradicts Israeli claims of avoiding civilian targets. Visiting more bombed homes, the foreign journalists witnessed the true human toll of the Israeli aggression, the devastating reality of the suffering of civilians. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
More than 170 civil society organizations joined a massive pro-Palestinian rally in Dublin on Saturday. Protesters strongly condemned the Israeli regime and its Western backers, accusing them of enabling genocide in Gaza.
They're attacking with high-precision military equipment that they're getting from the United States, and what's now being accepted as just normal international behavior means that we have people who are being dehumanized and demonized if they try to defend themselves.
Campaigners are calling for immediate sanctions on Tel Aviv and a total ban on the use of Irish airspace for the transfer of lethal weapons to Israel.
International law is there for a reason. So Israel needs to adhere to international law. That's all we're asking for. Please adhere to international law. And if everyone done that, we wouldn't have ended up here in the first place.
Official figures indicate that nearly 59,000 Palestinians, mostly women and children, have been killed by Israeli forces since October 2023. The real death toll is likely far higher. Meanwhile, famine is now imminent. The long-anticipated Occupied Territories Bill is expected to be introduced in Ireland this September. If passed, the legislation would ban trade with companies operating in illegal Israeli settlements.
In recent days, high-profile political figures in the United States have been mounting pressure on the Irish government to scrap the bill, threatening negative economic consequences if it goes ahead. But these activists are demanding that political leaders here do not capitulate to that pressure. Jerome Hughes, Dublin.
The echoes of the Iran-Iraq war still speak through walls. At Tehran's Holy Defense Museum, a delegation of foreign journalists walks through the scenes of sacrifice, endurance, and defiance. An immersive journey into the eight-year imposed war, where a nation bled but never broke.
Quite striking what they did, tried to capture the atmosphere of how it was, and also to show it to other people who didn't went through the war, who didn't live through the war, and don't have actual account of it. So it's pretty amazing what they've done.
The Holy Defense Museum in Tehran stands as both a memorial and a mirror of Iran's resilience.
The first impression upon entering this museum is a deep sense of the Iranian people's extraordinary resilience and unwavering determination. Despite enduring severe hardships during the eight-year war, when virtually the entire world stood against Iran, they persevered. Even in the challenging years following the revolution, Iran managed to overcome immense obstacles, ultimately emerging victorious and displaying remarkable strength.
From reconstructed front lines to artifacts of fallen soldiers, the museum offers more than history. It conveys a message that victory comes not just through arms, but through faith and national unity. The journalists listening closely as the guides explain how the Iranian people, civilians and soldiers alike, stood shoulder to shoulder to defend their homeland. The experience led the visiting journalists to draw powerful parallels between Iran's wartime past and its present-day resistance to foreign aggression.
Things like peace through strength and, you know, peace through war, all this just nonsense. It's nonsense. And what I'm taking from this museum is Iran never sought out war or aggression upon anyone. And all of the war, the imposed wars upon Iran, they never sought that out. It was imposed upon them by imperial powers.
As far as these foreign journalists are concerned, the museum underscores how, for Iranians, defending the homeland is deeply rooted in their faith, culture, and collective identity.
Here, the visiting journalists see not only the scars of war, but the unity, resilience, and overwhelming faith that has led to the victory of the Iranian nation. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
Italy's former prime minister and opposition five-star movement leader Giuseppe Conte has accused Giorgia Meloni's far-right government of violating international norms by maintaining military ties with the Israeli regime.
Si chiama genocidio.
What is happening in Gaza goes under the name of genocide. The genocidal intent is evident. Italy's government has made a mockery of the country by not requesting any sanctions against Israel. We expected you to at least tear up this memorandum, as Italy's military ties effectively support violations of human rights and international norms. How do you intend to continue importing weapons from Israel? This is an act that makes you complicit in the violation of international law.
Conte's remarks came after Italy's Chamber of Deputies rejected a motion by opposition parties Five Star Movement, the Democratic Party, Greens and Left Alliance and Italian Socialist Party to suspend a 25-year-old Italy-Israel Memorandum of Understanding by 142 votes to 102. The memorandum revolves around Rome and Tel Aviv cooperation in the military sector. On June 8, while the Israeli regime's genocide in Gaza continued to escalate, Italy's government renewed its military cooperation agreement with Tel Aviv. This memorandum of understanding, in place since 2005, is automatically renewed every 5 years, unless one of the two parties explicitly decides to suspend or terminate it. In late May, in response to the regime's ongoing genocide in Gaza, the regional governments of Puglia and Emilia-Romagna formally severed all institutional ties with the Israeli regime. Italy's national government has not even been able to speak a word of solidarity for the thousands of civilian Gazans slaughtered by war criminal Benjamin Netanyahu.
C'è una sudditanza che giustifica.
Italy is utterly subjugated to Israel. We keep supplying Tel Aviv with military materials, including ammonium nitrate and tritium, and importing weapons from Israel. The amount of arms we imported tripled in 2024 compared to the year before.
Our motion was a strong message given by all opposition forces in the face of Netanyahu's brutal attacks that continue to kill Gazans and hitting even a Catholic church in the Strip. Our government must condemn once and for all Israelis' extermination of Palestinians.
Italy is the third Israeli regime's arms supplier following the US and Germany. Max Civili, Rome.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar. A lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Amin Rastani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. That last inspiration that we want to take, inshallah, from the day of Ashura, I felt would be good to be that of death itself, and that everything is going to end, brothers and sisters. I want to share with you some hadiths, inshallah, as much as I can today. As many hadiths as I can that speak of this the importance of this death. And the Prophet said that hearts, they rust, just like how iron rusts. And what is that? How do you polish it? He said, through qira'atul Qur'an wa dhikrul maut. You polish the hearts by remembering death and reciting Qur'an. And Qur'an is always reminding us that death is coming, by the way. That's why people like Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli, they say that death gives meaning to life. And then I noticed later on Mike Tyson also said it. But Ayatollah Jawadi, he says this, and of course he understands it differently than him. He says that death gives meaning to this life that we're on, or else this life that we have here didn't have meaning. Why? Because this life doesn't make sense. It's all hardship. Yet we're so attached to it as if this is the best we can get. So death, what it does is that it removes that forgetfulness and heedlessness. It also promotes zuhd and repulsion from the dunya as well. The Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa sallam, أَكْثِرُوا مِن ذِكْرِ الْمَوْتِ فَإِنَّهُ يَزْهَدُ فِي الدُّنْيَا. You want to gain zuhd? Zuhd means that you're not interested in something. You want to not be interested in dunya? Remember death. It's obvious. I don't need to explain. It says that someone asked Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam, tell me something that I can benefit from. He said, يَا أَبَا عُبَيْدَ أَكْثِرْ ذِكْرَ الْمَوْتِ. Remember death a lot. فَإِنَّهُ لَمْ يُكْثِرَ الْإِنسَانِ ذِكْرِ الْمَوْتِ إِلَّا زَهِدَ فِي الدُّنْيَا. Because there is not a person out there that remembers death more often, except that they lose their interest a little bit in this dunya. That interest that we have that will push us to the point that we will do anything for it, even if it's something that destroys our akhirah and compromises it, that's what it takes care of. It doesn't make it that important for you. It says some people were speaking highly of someone in the presence of the Prophet, and so he asked. So those of us out there who want criteria for who to befriend, says that they were speaking to the Holy Prophet, and they were telling him about a friend that they have. Like, we have this friend, so great, this friend of ours. This friend of ours, spiritual this, spiritual that. Well, the Prophet asked one simple question. He said, كَيْفَ كَانَ ذِكْرُ صَاحِبِكُمْ لِلْمَوْتِ. How is the remembrance of death with this friend of yours? Like, does he talk about death ever? Does he bring it up? They said, no, not really. مَا كُنَّا نَكَادْ نَسْمَعُ يَذْكُرُ الْمَوْتِ. We don't remember really him talking about it too much or bringing it up. What did the Prophet say? He said, then this friend of yours isn't as high as you think he is. Okay? So, Mount and death is super awesome, super important, because the destination's importance rubs off on it. If a person doesn't understand that, yeah, then shows that they're not that high. Okay? Now, because of that death and barzakh course that I've taught 85 times, people, they refer to me as the death sheikh. It's fine. According to the Prophet, that's a good thing. This one's beautiful too. I mean, these are just small little bits of gold here and there that we could have thought of ourselves, but when the Imam say it, it has a different effect on us. مَنْ أَكْثَرَ ذِكْرَ الْمَوْتِ رَضِيَ مِنَ الدُّنْيَا بِالْيَسِيرِ. The one who remembers death often will be satisfied and content with a little bit. Yeah. In other words, a person who's not content with a little bit usually is a person that doesn't have too much of a relationship with death. Now, there's a person like Salman al-Farsi. His relationship with death is like this. So, when he's leaving this dunya, he has nothing. They say he had like two items. That's it. Now, that's Salman. I don't want anyone now to go and do something crazy, okay? There have been cases where spiritual speakers have said certain things and people's lives have been ruined because then the wife or the husband are like, we have to do this now because that speaker said so. And then all of a sudden, this guy or this wife is pushing for something that messes everything up to the point that the kids probably leave Islam later. So it's important we understand what we're supposed to say and understand each place, each thing has its own place. This is not for you and I. This is for Salman al-Farsi. It says that when he left his dunya, he just had like a little rug and like a pot or something like that. I don't know what it is. Like two items, that's it. And when he's leaving this dunya, he's worried. He's like, how is my hisab going to be? Then what about, you know, us? In this day and age that we live in, we need a lot more things going on in our lives, okay? We can't live like that anymore. And if we do, it might even be haram to live like that because we're hurting ourselves and hurting others. But let's get that message here in these stories. Yeah? What's the default? What's the rule? The rule is radiya bil yasir. They will be radi with yasir. They will be okay with a little bit. A little bit is a relative term and notion. If I look around right now and I see some and I look at some people, I'll be like, whoa, what's going on there? So that's going to be abundant. And the opposite of that is going to be, okay, this person has a normal house, normal life, above average is fine, you know. It's good, things looking good. I take care of my landscaping, I take care of my my house and all of that, but it's nothing like crazy either, okay? Well, that is going to be normal then. It's relative. That normal of today might have been crazy 100 years ago, okay? So I want us to understand, we have a dynamic faith. The general rules have been given to us, but the application of those rules, they change over time and circumstances, etc. The Holy Prophet, Han man zahida fi dunya hanat alayhi al-musibat. Okay, a person who reaches a point now that they're not very interested in the dunya anymore because of dhikr al-maut. Because of that, and as a result of that, this person, the musibas and tragedies that they might have become easier on them. Because they know this dunya is a little puny time period of my life that is going to pass soon. And so why lose everything over this musibah? Okay, a musibah is hard. I'll try my best to be patient. I'll try my best to be satisfied with Allah's decision. But in the end, I'm not going to lose my faith over it, inshallah. And so if a person doesn't remember death enough, what happens is they'll be happy with what they have here. And when they're happy with what they have here, they will do whatever it is to secure what they have here.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Adi Alimun Hali Hakimun Mati. شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمن
يا إلهي لك الحمد الله يا إلهي لك الشكر الله على فضلك وجودك على فضلك وجودك الله الله
oh Allah your blessings are so many there's too many to count too many to count. Allah, Allah. Oh my Lord, as much as I praise you, I can't thank you enough.
Allah.
Oh Allah, your blessings are so many, they're too many to count.
Allah, Allah.
Oh my Lord, as much as I praise you, I can't thank you enough.
cast into the light.
Allah, Allah.
Oh Allah, your blessings are so many, they're too many to count.
Allah, Allah.
Oh my Lord, as much as I praise you, I can't thank you enough.
Allah.
Oh Allah, your blessings are so many, they're too many to count.
Allah, Allah.
Oh my Lord, as much as I praise you, I can't thank you.
Cultural diplomacy has been linked to building a two-way highway, a highway to create canals to produce a true picture of a nation and its values. In other words, cultural diplomacy is an effort to transfer culture and civilization from one nation to other nations. In the international relations arena, this exchange is intended to influence foreign policy. Cultural diplomacy is a clear example of applying soft power. The U.S. International Development Agency, USAID, is an important American axis of applying soft power in other countries. This organization was founded in 1961 during John F. Kennedy's presidency to help the economic and social development of countries worldwide. And in 2009, it was officially introduced as a U.S. State Department and Department of Defense collaborative agency. Till before 1961, a number of different foundations operated within the framework of the Marshall Plan to further the U.S.'s general diplomacy, and in the same year, following an operative order by John F. Kennedy, they were upgraded and assimilated as the U.S. International Development Agency. At present, the U.S. International Development Agency, USAID, is the most important American external development foundation, which expands in over 100 countries America's foreign policy interests such as hegemony, liberal democracy, and free markets.
The soft power would be spreading information in Cuba about how wonderful life is in the United States. Everyone's rich, everyone happy. Children, young people go to concerts, go to the movies, and so on. And if you could only overthrow your government, you'd be like us. That's soft power.
The United States International Development Agency states its duty as managing foreign non-military aid. This complex is known as one of the greatest international aid agencies, with a budget of over $27 billion. Allocating a budget of such scale to humanitarian activity worldwide no doubt has a hidden side to its story. The U.S. diplomatic apparatus says, instability in this interconnected world can also affect us. Hence, alongside the army, we must play a stabilizing role among nations and move local governments to take responsibility. It is with this belief that they justify USAID activity, because this method is more intelligent, safer, and less costly than sending its military force in. After World War II, the United States, to increase its own comfort and national security, adopted a new strategy to expand its economic, cultural, and social influence in the world by shaping countries' governmental and domestic structures. The U.S. first embarked on this strategy with the Marshall Plan to reconstruct Europe. was with the Marshall Plan that America managed to fight communist influence in Europe, speed up the occurrence of a united Europe, create a vast consumer market for American industrial products, create the grounds for the dollar to rule as a universal currency, and most importantly, to seize great influence in these countries. While the Marshall Plan was being implemented in Europe, Truman's Article 4 program was being pursued as a technical help program for ensuring political stability and economic growth by the Technical Cooperation Head Office in developing countries. In years to follow, the trustee office for such foreign aid underwent some changes. And finally, in 1961, the U.S. International Development Agency was founded based on the foreign aid law. Marshall has still today been America's biggest foreign policy plan. To implement this plan, the Economic Cooperation Administration, ECA, was created under the supervision of the U.S. President. The chief of this office would be appointed by the president and approved by the Senate. In fact, this head office was on a par with an executive ministry in the eyes of the U.S. government.
Later, President Truman drove to the Capitol to put the Marshall Plan for European aid before Congress.
I'm here today to report to you on the critical nature of the situation in Europe and to recommend action for your consideration. I believe that it must be the policy of the United States.
In Europe, the response has been immediate.
The General Manager or Secretary General of this office and the U.S. Secretary of State would have to continually update each other on the situation.
Aid could best be applied.
Anytime the Secretary of State might conclude an act or proposal or inaction by the Secretary General is against U.S. foreign policy goals, and should differences of opinion remain unresolved, the issue would finally be referred to the President.
To rebuild a shattered economy and to reestablish inter-European trade on a basis of strength.
This is now a norm at USAID, which is an offspring of the Marshall Plan, and the manager of this complex is considered an important political personality. In the 1960s, the goal and focus of USAID was technical and financial aid. In the 1970s, it was more involved with basic needs. That's nutrition, population planning, healthcare education, and expansion of human resources. In the 1980s, it focused on expanding free market and stabilizing currency and financial systems. Lasting development became USAID's number one priority. After the collapse of the USSR, this agency played the main part in expanding American influence in the governing systems of countries left over from the USSR. In the 2000s, with the start of the wars against Afghanistan and Iraq, USAID was asked to take on in those countries the construction of the government, infrastructure, civil society, and basic services such as healthcare and education.
So when like when the United States invaded Afghanistan 2001, a lot of people in the rural areas thought, okay, here's this rich country coming in, maybe it'll do something for us. And there was a lot of positive feeling and hope about the U.S. in the early days of the invasion. That disappeared very quickly. Turned out that the U.S. forces, when they moved into Afghanistan, wanted to find people who would, local people who would run the country effectively. They turned to the warlords, the people who were all over Afghanistan, who were running their own areas, brutal, murderous, corrupt warlords.
USAID began reconstructing those two countries with the biggest fund allocation.
Afghanistan's farmers emerged from 30 years of war, and the United States Agency for International Development gives them a hand.
But its activity doesn't stop at these two countries. 100 countries today use this agency's services. At present, this organization is supported by U.S. Congress with a budget of $27.2 billion. It's worth seeing where in the world these countries are that USAID acts in.
Foreign assistance cannot solve all the world's problems. But what we can do is support local leaders to develop programs in partnership with local communities.
Organization as extended and important as USAID must be run by someone powerful. It is headed at present by the world's 41st most powerful woman, going by the Forbes list. That's Samantha Power, half Irish and half American, born in 1970. Samantha Power began her career as a war correspondent in the Yugoslav wars. Since then, until she made it as special assistant to the U.S. President for Human Rights, her activities have been many.
Story.
You could say all these activities interconnect in human rights issues. And yet she is known as a key Obama administration figure in convincing the president of military intervention in Libya.
Hi, everybody. I'm here on Trebevich Mountain in Sarajevo. So much has changed in this country since I lived and worked here in the early to mid-1990s.
In her academic works, she has specifically focused on genocide. And in 2002, her book, A Problem from Hell, America and the Age of Genocide, was published.
He saw the universal capacity to carry out harms of great magnitude. Lemkin knew that no one...
Also, the documentary Watchers of the Sky addresses Power's activities in connection with the issue of confronting genocide.
I became interested in terrible suffering because it happened so many times. I said to myself, I'm going to do something about it.
Lemkin came with a new idea to transform these massacres into a crime.
Something clicked in him. Maybe if I had a better word, maybe then governments would ban the mass murder of civilians. Genocide. So he has a word. Now what?
The fact that a character such as Power is so sensitive to genocide is commendable. But only if she is fair and free-thinking enough to also see her own sovereign government's role in the great and disastrous genocide in the Congo and to react to it. Can these USAID measures be a cover-up for far more horrendous crimes? To quote the Research Center Global Research, the genocide of the people of Congo by Ugandan and Rwandan elements, with the full support and guidance of the U.S., has so far taken 6 million innocent lives. Even so, the U.S. has covered up such crimes and denies any knowledge of them. America tells the people of the world it cannot determine how 6 million individuals just perished in the Democratic Republic of Congo. This is while it was Washington itself that armed the criminals to the teeth. U.S. governments since the Second World War have supported and guided the most terrible massacres in various countries. America took on the organization and the financial and weapons support of the most terrible massacre since World War II, which is the massacre of the Democratic Republic of Congo. From 1996 till today, Washington has watered eastern Congo provinces with the blood of over 6 million people. Uganda and Rwanda take orders from their masters and weapons providers, meaning the U.S. and U.K. governments. Should the Nuremberg International Justice Law be properly practiced, the highest political figures in London and Washington would be convicted of the most heinous crimes.
When the United States lavishly supports Saudi Arabia, one of the most reactionary states in the world, is it supporting democracy? When the United States supports Israel in its crushing of Palestinian rights, is that supporting democracy? Actually, that's a clear case. The Arab world has had very few democratic elections, but there was one, a carefully monitored one, January 2006. There was an election in Palestine, carefully monitored, determined to be free and fair by international observers. As soon as the election results came in, the United States began to plan for a military coup to overthrow the elected government, imposed harsh sanctions. Israel moved in and same thing, sanctions, military attacks. Why? Because the wrong people won. The Hamas was the majority, the party that had the most votes and was running the government. Well, the U.S. and Israel weren't accepting that, so they immediately moved to overthrow and destroy the government. That's the one, probably the most free election in the Arab world outside of Lebanon, a couple of cases. But is that supporting democracy? Well, we can run through the list, and what you find is the United States has no objection to democracy if it comes out the way it wants. If it doesn't come out the way it wants, it's going to try to undermine and prevent it.
I, Samantha Power.
I, Samantha Power.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support and defend.
That I will support and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
Against all enemies.
Against all enemies.
Foreign and domestic.
Foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith.
That I will bear true faith.
And allegiance.
And allegiance.
To the same.
To the same.
That I take this obligation freely.
That I take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation.
Without any mental reservation.
Or purpose of evasion.
Or purpose of evasion.
And that I will well and faithfully.
And that I will well and faithfully.
Discharge the duties.
Discharge the duties. So
help me. Whether Samantha Power has reacted to the Congo massacre or not, she has all the same been appointed head of an organization that claims philanthropy.
She saw you on the big screen. You were a role model.
In January 2021, Joe Biden introduced Power for chairmanship of USAID.
Thank you so much.
She won the seat with 68 to 26 votes on the 28th of April. Power took the position in the thick of USAID efforts to pay a great deal of foreign aid during the COVID-19 pandemic.
But I don't know that I've ever made a New Year's resolution as ambitious as end the economic oppression of women. globally.
Choosing a female manager for an organization focusing its efforts most on empowering women in deprived countries is a matter on the side which at first sight may not come to notice as it should, and may just come across as an issue to do with the individual's capability in landing a good job. But studying USAID's report card shows this was no accidental choice.
1 year on, life for women and girls is very different, with harsh rules including restrictions on education and employment.
But why women? Because women are important, and efforts on women's issues are not just feed for propaganda.
And a swiftly growing population that must be fed. How do we address global challenges in a rapidly changing world? By empowering women and girls.
And efforts on women's issues are not just feed for propaganda. The women in each society matter, because as stated before, any change in the women of a society means a change in that society's culture.
Cover more ground and last longer. And when women have control of resources, land, and markets, they can play a vital role in helping to feed a hungry planet. From climate change to extreme poverty, women are proving they're ready to transform the world. We cannot solve the world's problems without women, period.
If we ponder upon the long-term effects of such measures, we will notice sending Najla and Raja into a garage and smearing their faces with motor oil does not stop at the two sisters' lives, but is targeting all Muslim girls in a traditional society, redefining women's liberty to them in a way appealing to imperialism. It is true that infiltration as a process generally begins with military intervention. But intervening governments have long-term plans in different economic and cultural fields to grow roots in target countries. It is such that conditions move in the right direction for the people and governments of infiltrated countries to indirectly fulfill the meddling government's goals. When the women of a country view an organization such as USAID as their savior, their children will also do so. Just like Roma, the Bangladeshi mother, who transfers her view to her son. On the whole, one could say that the United States has drawn on its collective experience of influencing different parts of the world and spreading its hegemony to acquire a different approach, which helps it write a different tailored prescription for each country and culture that would win the minds of the native people. Of course, these prescriptions are not the answer always and everywhere. And sometimes, contrary to U.S. prediction and its efforts, the natives just go their own way.
Good afternoon to all our listeners. You are tuning to Iran Radio. Nice to have you with us. Here are some interesting facts about Islam. Muslim scholar Ibn al-Haytham, known as al-Hazen in Europe, who was born in 965 AD, formulated the scientific method and has been referred to as the world's first true scientist. He is also often regarded as the first theoretical physicist, making a significant contribution to the theory of light and optics. Additionally, he developed what is called celestial mechanics, which led to the eventual work of Europeans such as Copernicus, Galileo, Johannes Kepler, and Isaac Newton. We'll listen to the continuation of Iran Radio. Thank you for joining us. We start off this hour's programs with our news bulletin. That will be followed by Kids Corner. The program is all about children and child's play, a fun program specially made for children. And we round up this hour with our varied radio productions feature.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israel's genocidal campaign in Gaza has killed more Palestinian civilians, including a journalist and her children. President Pezeshkian rejects as an illusion allegations that Iran's nuclear program is over, stressing uranium enrichment will continue based on international law. Plus, Iran and Russia holding the last day of their joint maritime drills in the Caspian Sea, codenamed Cataracts 2025. This is World News with me, Behruz Najafi. It's good to have you with us. Wednesday has become yet another deadly day for Palestinians in the Gaza Strip as the Israeli occupation forces strike the war-ravaged territory indiscriminately. At least 10 people were killed in the bombing of an apartment in Gaza City's Tal al-Hawa neighborhood. Another strike in the same neighborhood killed a Palestinian journalist along with five other children. Fatalities were also reported following an attack targeting a group of civilians in the town of Bani Sahela near Khan Yunis, southern Gaza. Also in the south, Israeli forces opened fire on Palestinians near an aid distribution center, killing at least two of them and injuring some 40 others. The genocide, which began October 2023, has killed more than 59,100 Palestinians, leaving over 124,500 injured. Now, correspondent Motieb Musabbe is in Gaza City's Deir al-Bala. He's now joining us to bring us an update on the latest developments happening there. Motieb.
Yes, first of all, let me start with Deir al-Bala City, whereas the Israeli occupation forces have withdrawn from the southern parts and outer skirts of Deir al-Bala City, leaving a significant and massive trail of destruction that has reach the infrastructure, the residential buildings, in addition to the agricultural lands, and in addition to that, as you know, hundreds of thousands of Palestinian families were forcibly expelled amid that brutal ground offensive that targeted that area. So the current situation is still pretty horrific for the Palestinian people who are attempting right now to return to those areas. Meanwhile, at least five dead bodies were recovered and extracted from the rubble of the destroyed houses, and according to the medical staff, they estimate that several others are still believed missing under the rubble of the destroyed houses there. And to be honest, the current situation is still heartbreaking here in the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital, because the morgue of the Al-Aqsa Hospital, which is still next to us here, reeks of the smell of blood and smell of death. In addition to that, the families here are still bereaved. They are mourning their beloved ones, so the situation is excruciating at all levels. Meanwhile, the Israeli occupation forces continue their brutal strikes and attacks targeting various parts of Gaza Strip. The fish attack took place in the eastern side of Khan Yunis City after the Israeli fighter drones attacked a gathering of Palestinian people, killing three Palestinian civilians at least. In the meantime, the Israeli attacks against the aid seekers actually were continued because over the past couple of moments, the Israeli occupation forces killed at least four Palestinian aid seekers need an Israeli corridor. Those Palestinians are gathering right now in that area, aiming desperately to have anything to eat or to feed themselves or their children.
Okay, thank you so much. Hopefully, we pray, Moti, that this situation will be dealt with as soon as possible. Words and condemnations are enough. Action needs to be taken now. Thank you so much for that. Moti Abu Musab, our correspondent in Deir al-Bala, Gaza City. Now, moving on, Gaza's humanitarian crisis deepening as the Palestinian territory is gripped by malnutrition and starvation. Our reporter was just talking about it. Now, let's take a listen to several Palestinians in Khan Yunis in Gaza City expressing frustration with the dire humanitarian conditions and lack of basic supplies.
He died from malnutrition because his family was unable to feed him.
Children are dying from malnutrition. Infants as young as 1 or 2 months old are dying from malnutrition. The crossings are closed, and there is no access to medicine, treatment, or food. My son's condition reflects the suffering of the people of Gaza.
Let our voices be heard by the whole world. How are children dying? I'm also on the verge of death. I can hardly speak from the exhaustion of searching through the markets, and I haven't been able to find even a kilo of lentils, pasta, or anything at all.
Famine is striking the Gaza Strip in a frightening way. More than 90% of the population is suffering from severe malnutrition, and hospitals are overwhelmed with patients of malnutrition. We are talking about 17,000 children suffering from severe malnutrition and more than 70,000 children suffering from malnutrition overall. As of today, there are 71 patients, including children, who have passed away from